Well, we all know that growing up can be very difficult, especially in our culture. And we're all aware, all of you are especially aware of the obstacles that get in the way of young people as they move to adulthood. And sometimes it makes us wonder, doesn't it? There are 4.5 billion, as a B, 4.5 billion people using social media. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and it's prompted a global debate about the effects of social media on young people and how it hinders them from growing up. A senator from Minnesota said that social media is harmful to children. And one survey revealed 83% of Americans said, we don't really know what social media does to children and how it affects them growing up. There's a whistleblower inside Facebook said, you know, we have information from surveys that we've done that there's a negative impact of Facebook on young people. Wall Street Journal last fall said increasing research points out that that social media has negative effects on children. Well, it does make you wonder, doesn't it? James Davidson Hunter is a sociologist at the University of Virginia. He wrote a book a while back called You Can Change the World, fascinating book. But early in the book, first five pages, he says, you know, this is a difficult time to go to adulthood. He said, just think about children, what they encounter in life, that, you know, very early on they watch television, they see murders in full color, and then they play video games where they kill other people and are killed, and they go to school not knowing if they're going to be the victims of a school shooting, and they follow celebrities, sports figures whose marriages are short and whose lives are unhappy. And Hunter said, it's no wonder young people are having a hard time growing up and feeling like life is worthwhile. Well, it does make you wonder, doesn't it? Irving Stone has a biography out of Michelangelo. Michelangelo grew up in Florence, Italy. And his father paid tuition for him to have classical education, Latin and Greek, and then ran out of money. And so he decided that he would apprentice 14-year-old Michelangelo to a wool merchant, W-O-O-L, wool merchant. Well, Michelangelo told his dad, I don't want to be a wool merchant. I want to be a painter. And his father said, don't you think for a moment that I'm going to let you waste your life and embarrass your family by being a painter. And that was in 1488. So maybe it's always been difficult to grow up, I suppose. But it does make you wonder. There's a line that's usually credited to Mark Twain, but there's a lot of question about whether or not he actually said it, but it's a great line. It says that when I was 14 years old, I thought my father was the most ignorant man on the planet. And by the time I reached 21, I was surprised how much the old man had learned in 7 years. Well, it does make you wonder, doesn't it? Well, we've all known young people, and you're working with a lot of them who have a difficult time growing up, and some of us had a difficult time reaching adulthood. I'm reminded of my friend Nathan, who graduated from high school 2001, then came 9/11. And so he joined the United States Army, and they taught him to kill people with explosives, and he was good at it. One of the first Americans to go into Afghanistan, and killed lots of people there, came back, just couldn't adapt to mainstream American culture as a young adult. Started drinking, went to college, showed up in class drunk, one day got in his car drunk, drove down the freeway at a high speed, hit a wall, demolished the car, walked away. But didn't have any clue what he wanted to do. Or a friend of mine named Jeffrey grew up in Southeast Ohio. Family was dysfunctional, his parents, drugs and alcohol. Got to one of our Christian schools. He didn't have a clue about what direction to take in life. Well, on and on it goes. We know young people who are puzzled and confused, perplexed, lost about what to do in life. So, how do we help them? And of course, that's what you do, and you do it so well. And proud and honored to be associated with you. But I wondered if there was a word in Scripture that might help as we leave and leave something ringing in your ears. Did 2 Chronicles 28 Sunday night, so I thought we'd go to 2 Chronicles 29. It's next in order. It's about Hezekiah. Hezekiah became king when he was 25. That's striking, isn't it? We're talking about how hard it is for many young people to become adults, and a lot of 25-year-olds don't know. He became king, and he became a great king. 29 years of ruling Judah. And the chronicler surveys all 20 kings of Judah, and out of the 20, there are only 8 that get an A-plus mark, that get a good verdict, and Hezekiah is one of those kings. And it makes us wonder, you know, what was there something about this man, this 25-year-old, that might be a lesson for us, that might be helpful for us? But in order to understand the last 29 years of Hezekiah, I think we need to understand the first 25 years. So Hezekiah was the son of Ahaz and Abi. And Hezekiah was 9 when his father Ahaz became king. They lived in the palace in Jerusalem next to the temple. They were at the center of Judean life. And his father Ahaz just had one rule that he apparently used in all of life, and that was do what's best for Ahaz. And so if you had a god, little g, you wanted Ahaz to worship that god, if there was something in it for Ahaz, you know, he'd worship with you. If you invited him to a temple, aside from the temple of God, he'd go with you if there was something in it for Ahaz. If you had a cause, Ahaz would take it up as long as he could see some benefit coming his way. Well, one morning, Abi and Ahaz went up to the boys' bedroom. There were at least 4 brothers. One was Hezekiah. And they took 2 of the brothers and took them down to the south part of Jerusalem, down to the valley of the sons of Hinnom. And they gathered together some rocks, built an altar, put some wood on it, lit the fire, tied the boys up, and offered them as sacrifices to a foreign god. And we want to say, what in the world were Abi and Ahaz thinking? I mean, how could you do that to your own sons? Well, Ahaz was doing what was best for Ahaz. He thought there was something in it for him. And then Ahaz closed down the temple of God. He just locked it. No more access to the Holy of Holies. Couldn't get to the Ark of the Covenant, the altar of incense. Didn't have any incense on it. No bread on the table of showbread. Couldn't light the candles. Locked the door. Outside in the courtyard where the altar was to God, threw that down, built another altar to a false god. And why was he doing that? Well, he was just doing what was best for Ahaz. Well, that's how Hezekiah grew up those first 25 years. Lived in a house with an egotistical, self-centered, do only what's best for me father, not knowing whether he'd be the next sacrifice down in the valley of the son of Hinnom. And then Hezekiah becomes king. And we don't know much about what happens in the last 28 years. We know what happens in the first year when he's 25 years old. He becomes king. First thing he does is he says, unlock the temple. We're reopening the temple of God. And he calls the priests and the Levites and he says, you go into the temple and get all the trash and garbage my dad put in there and you carry it out to the Valley of Hinnom and you destroy it. And I want you to start offering sacrifices again on the altar. And if you need animals, you can take them from my farms. And then he says, we're going to have a Passover. He invited everybody in Judah, invited everybody in North Israel, and they had a Passover like they hadn't had in a couple hundred years. And that's all in the first year of Hezekiah the king. Now, I suspect you're wondering, how in the world did that happen? You know, growing up in that kind of bad environment, how does he become, as a 25-year-old, that kind of king? Well, I don't have a verse that I can point to. But Roland Wolf is an Old Testament scholar and an expert on the prophet Micah. And he says that he thinks the answer may be Micah the prophet. Well, Micah was a country boy, grew up in Moresheth Gath, down south Judah, worked in the fields, took care of the sheep, God called him to be a prophet. He had to decide, am I going to stay on the farm or am I going to do what God says? Well, he followed God and he went to Jerusalem to be a prophet. And he arrived in Jerusalem when Hezekiah was a teenager. Well, Micah was not very effective. He preached from street to street and square to square and house to house, and nobody listened to him. In fact, his self-description, Micah 1:8, "For this I will lament and wail. I will go stripped and naked. I will make lamentations like the jackals and mourning like the ostriches." Well, he knew people didn't want to hear him, but he said, you know, even though I sound like a broken record, you know, I'm going to do it anyhow. Even if I have to go naked, I'm going to preach. Even if they continue to complain that I sound like a wild animal, I'm going to preach. According to chapter 7 of his book, even his wife wasn't converted. No one answered the invitation. No one came forward. He was a failure. But Wolf says that he thinks Micah had one convert, that teenage Hezekiah heard Micah preach. And Micah transformed Hezekiah, and Hezekiah transformed Judah. Everybody needs a Micah. And so Ruth had her Naomi, and Esther had her Mordecai, and Peter had Andrew, and Mary Magdalene had Jesus. Everyone needs a Micah. And so Saul was hating Christians, had blood on his hands, papers in his pockets, said, I'm going to go to Damascus, do in some Christians. On the way, he encountered the Lord on the road, became a Christian, and decided to serve God, and said, I'm going to go back to Jerusalem, join myself to the mother church. Well, they didn't want to have anything to do with Saul because he had blood on his hands and papers in his pockets. They were afraid of Saul. Then along came Barnabas, introduced Saul to the Jerusalem church. And soon the two were doing mission work together, Saul, Barnabas and Saul, and then became Paul and Barnabas. Barnabas was a Micah to Saul. Or down in Alexandria, a place where there are lots of universities and libraries, a young man named Apollos was a polished, eloquent speaker. And up the coast, there was a guy named John the Baptist, and he heard about him and thought, this is a remarkable doctrine. Paul started talking about that all over the place, but he was caught in a time warp, some things that happened he didn't know about. And he was talking about John the Baptist one day, and then Priscilla and Aquila heard him and said, there are a couple things you need to know about a cross. And they instructed him in the way of the Lord more perfectly, and Aquila and Priscilla were a Micah for Apollos. I grew up in Western Pennsylvania. Went to a rural elementary school. I was naive, completely unaware of what was going on in the world. And then seventh grade, went to the city junior high school. Fell in with the wrong group of guys. Lunchtime, we went out and watched fist fights and went down to the store where the smoking and the swearing was going on. Got involved in a shoplifting ring in downtown. Life wasn't going very well for me in junior high. About the same time, the wife of a potato farmer invited me to her Sunday school class. And so I went. And quickly, I noticed the difference between what I was learning from my friends at school and what the wife of the potato farmer was telling me in Sunday school. And I said, that's a better road. And that wife of the potato farmer was my Micah. And I don't know where I would be today if it hadn't been for her. And so really, that's our mission, isn't it, to be a Micah. Young people have a tough time growing up, and they need a Micah to, you know, come into their lives. When we lived in Milwaukee, Sally and another woman met a young woman named Lynn, and they studied with her, and she became Christian. And she was so enthusiastic about her Christian faith, but her husband, Dennis, was not enthusiastic about her Christian faith. In fact, we'd come to the front door, and he'd walk out the back door. And Saturday night, he would disable the car, the family car, so she couldn't go to church. and this went on. And then Lynn got sick, had to go to the hospital. Dennis was beside himself, didn't know what to do. Sally and some others carried food over to the house and helped Dennis navigate those difficult times of Lynn being in the hospital. And Dennis's heart melted. He became a Christian, became an elder in that church. Last time I talked to him, Dennis was about ready to preach his first sermon. And Sally was a Micah for Dennis. Well, Nathan, the boy that graduated from high school in 2001 and went to Afghanistan, blew up people, and came back, just couldn't get absorbed into life, wrecked his car. Well, he got to a Christian college and encountered a Bible professor named Bruce. And Nathan would fail a test and about ready to drop out. Bruce would stand at the door and say, "No, you're not dropping out." And Nathan would do something wrong, and Bruce would be at the door and say, "Well, we're going to correct that." And on it went. And this Sunday, Nathan will be preaching at the Barlow Vincent Church of Christ because Bruce was his Micah. And Jeffrey, the boy, grew up in Southeast Ohio, dysfunctional parents, arrived at one of our Christian colleges. He had no idea what he wanted to do with life. Actually, the Christian college had no idea what to do with Jeffrey. And so they assigned him to campus maintenance. And he fell under the influence of a godly elder named Dave Stewart. And today, Jeffrey is the preacher for one of the largest churches of Christ in Ohio. Everybody needs a Micah. Everybody needs a Micah.